I didn't know what would end up it would involve too, but what it has become is an opportunity for me to sit down and talk to some people for longer than a segment. I've been doing a morning show where I have about 8 minutes to spend with somebody, but with my guest today, there have been many, many times over the last 10 years where we just start getting into it, and I think, man, I wish I had a whole rest of the hour with Tom Sorensen. And what do you know? I do today. Tom Sorensen, longtime columnist for the Charlotte Observer, here in the Ty Boyd studio. It's good to see you.
You too. You know, 8 minutes always felt too long for me.
Not for me. I always had about 8 more questions for you, because you're one of those people that, having grown up in Charlotte, the idea to just pick the brain of Tom Sorensen and all those years of reading your columns in The Observer, this is going to be fun. And I have to tell you, my earliest memory of you was when I was,
third grade.
I was a little older than that, but I loved pro wrestling when I was a kid. And growing up in Charlotte, pro wrestling during that era was completely different than pro wrestling right now. Now, there are some remnants and influences in today's wrestling scene that were born in Charlotte in the mid-80s and early 90s, Jim Crockett Promotions. I've talked about that whole scene before, but I remember there was one Friday. And the first column I ever remember you wrote was a series of wrestling profiles. You remember those?
We would go, I would go to Briar Bend Road, where the Crockett operation was headquartered, nondescript building, which I think was intentional. And you go inside, and it was just, Ric Flair's a friend to this day. But I wrote about people who spoke no known language. I wrote about, I still remember writing about one wrestler. And he never spoke. So I wrote that he spoke no known language. I just like that term. And his wife called furious, and she said, he speaks 7 languages. I said, but not in the ring. He speaks wrestling. He grunts and stuff. Come on. And but the cool thing about, unless they spoke no known language, they never said no comment. So it was gold for me. And it was really enjoyable.
And it wasn't just Ric Flair. Now, Ric Flair was one of them, but it was even the guys that are on the periphery. Like, I remember when I used to watch the old NWA, you'd have those shows, and they'd call them squash matches, where you'd have the stars like Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes and Magnum TA, but then there'd be like the Mulkey brothers, who would always be the guys that lost. And I was watching one time, and I still to this day don't know if it was a mistake or not, but one of the Mulkeys accidentally won, and then they made that into a storyline, and I always wonder if that was them trying to cover up a mistake or something. But yeah, you wrote a series of articles, and I remember, latching onto that, and that was kind of my gateway into your columns. And then as I got older, the left-hand column in The Observer, whenever something of importance happened, and sometimes it wasn't the next day, sometimes it was the thing would happen, and then a few days later, you'd get Tom Sorensen's digest of it, which to me was kind of like the final word on it, and sometimes the first word. But you're an institution in this town, and I know a lot of people are excited to hear about what you've been up to and what you think about things today that you don't necessarily have that column to expound on every day. But I'll start there. What is Tom Sorensen doing in 2021?
Do radio once a week for John Boy and Billy. Left the paper, took a buyout at the end of 2015, and they offered one to all the old people. And I'd never considered leaving. But we'd gone to a new computer system, state-of-the-art, that we'd keep forever, which we hadn't done for like 2 years. I couldn't pick it up. But in related news, I couldn't pick our old one up. My computer skills were just, and I tried. I went to all the computer classes, and then I went to all the remedial classes. It was funny, because if the average age in the newsroom was, say, 32, in the remedial classes, it was probably 62. And the first remedial class, the instructor said, I want everybody to turn on their computer, which is not an unreasonable request. I couldn't turn it on. And I thought, man, if I can't do this stuff, and there was more and more we had to do, art to accompany our stories, setting things up, finding file art, I couldn't do it. And if I didn't do it, it meant the people I worked for had to. It wasn't fair to them, because it's not a fun part of the job, and I was dragging it down, and I thought, I got lucky. I had a job waiting for me when I left the University of Minnesota, and I just thought, all right, I'm going to take a buyout. For the first time in my career, there won't be a net. See what happens. And so I did. If it weren't for the computers, I would have stayed. Not long, but I probably would have stayed another year or so.
Do you miss it?
Sometimes. When the Hornets signed, when they drafted LaMelo Ball, I thought, man, I want to write this because I just really liked his game. When they signed Gordon Hayward, they were ripped nationally and locally some, paying so much. But I don't think people realize how tough it is to entice a talented free agent basketball player to come to a market the size of Charlotte. I thought it was just a coup for them, even if he did get hurt, which he has. And I think that's a really good and entertaining team. And I would like to write about them. You know, somebody told me, you have to meet Rule, the coach of the Panthers. Mm-hmm. And went to training camp last year, and a guy respecting the organization said, man, you guys would hit it off. But I've never met him, and, you know, you're doing interviews remotely now mostly. And it's not fair for me to get in the way of the people who are doing it full time. I mean, Scott Fowler's a really good columnist, and it's not fair to me to get in his way in any way. And so I miss some of that, but for the most part, no.
Well, I want to talk about more. I said last hour when I was teasing this hour, I said we could talk about the past, we can talk about the present, and we can talk about the future. We can talk about the future of the whole media game, because that, I mean, it's changing as you and I speak right now. I've worked here since 1990, and we could write a book on how the radio game has changed. But we got a lots to talk about. Tom Sorensen, longtime columnist for the Charlotte Observer, in studio with me here. Longtime Charlotte Observer columnist Tom Sorensen in studio, and thank you again for being here.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to go to the WBT hotline for a moment, Tom, and bring on the tournament director for the Wells Fargo Championship. Gary Soba is back with us. He's joining us every day this week so we can check in and get a pulse of what's happening out at one of Charlotte's signature events. Gary, the Pro-Am is underway. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing wonderful. It's nice to see sunshine today, Bo.
Absolutely. And so I think, if my calculations are correct, most of the groupings are out there now. You about an hour ago, we had the signature group of the day, and for a lot of reasons, this is the signature group. But main thing to talk about here, of course, is you have Roy Williams and Mack Brown in a grouping that includes Gary Woodland and Will Zalatoris, who made a splash there at the Masters last month. But as you alluded to yesterday, this is a big Tar Heel Blue Day at the Wells Fargo Championship.
It is. We wanted to honor Coach Williams. He plays, you know, he loves golf, and he plays in the Pro-Am every year. And certainly when he retired, I thought this was a great opportunity for all the Tar Heel faithful to really honor him. 18 holes, and there is a lot of light blue. And, of course, it's early, and the crowd will surge as the day goes on. But the first tee was special with Gary Woodland, obviously started at Kansas and then ended here. And it's unfortunate that Davis Love, with a hip injury, can't join him from the backside. That was the plan, but there's a lot of fans out there.
And we also have Shaq Thompson out there. You have Ron Rivera playing with Wesley Walls. And then later on this afternoon at about 2:20, you'll have Christian McCaffrey teeing off with the group.
We do. We're picking up Christian right after practice, OTAs, and he'll be out here. So there's a large crowd, and we expect a fairly massive crowd on a very, very beautiful day. And it looks like the weather's going to be really nice the rest of the week.
So tomorrow, the tournament gets underway for real. The first round will be out here tomorrow morning, broadcasting this entire show from our usual spot. Any last things that people need to know if they're heading out today, or more importantly, the beginning of the tournament tomorrow?
No, a couple things. You know, bring chairs. You know, but don't have the normal grandstands because of COVID. And then children 15 and under are admitted free. And we'd love to have a lot of kids out here.
Excellent. Well, Gary, I'll let you get back to doing it because I know things are crazy today on the Pro-Am, but thanks for checking in. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks, Bo. Bye-bye.
Yes, sir. That's Gary Soba, the tournament director for the Wells Fargo Championship. Tom Sorensen is right across from me in the Ty Boyd studio. Now, you, over the years, writing for The Observer, covered so many events. Later next hour, I want to talk about, you know, all-timers and people that you covered, but the Wells Fargo Championship in particular. Talk about what that event has done for this city from your perspective.
It's done so much. I mean, it brings money in. But more than that, it just brings, here are these guys you see on TV. You read about them. You listen. You know, you feel as if you know them. And there they are in your town. I remember going to breakfast one morning during the tournament at Ballantyne and in a coffee shop out there. And there's Phil Mickelson with his daughter. And they're going over homework. And I thought, what a cool dad thing to do. I mean, this guy is going out there today to make his living, good living. And but he takes time to do that with his daughter. She's on the road with him. I just thought, what a classy thing. But you'd run into guys, some of the players in bars. You'd see them. You'd thing, I don't follow golf the way I follow the NFL or NBA or college basketball or boxing. But what I like is it's not static. So if you're out here, if you're out at the course, which is a beautiful course, as you know, you can get paid to burn calories. I mean, I don't know golf as well as a lot of the other riders. And so to make up for it, I would just move around and try to see things. And remember Jason Day, one of the best golfers on the tour. When he was new, I just ran into him one day when he finished, and we just started talking. And it wasn't who, what, where, when, and why. It was just like two human beings having a conversation. I thought, that's cool. And I think people, fans, get a glimpse of a guy. They can see him. They'll stake out a space in a tee box or on a green or see him on a fairway. And just through those details, through watching him and listening to him interact with his caddy, you get a feel for who he is.
Well, and from a standpoint of watching it on TV, because sometimes I like to go out there and walk around and be privy to some of the things you talked about, some of the moments that you don't see. And then you turn it on CBS on the weekend, and you see Charlotte put on display at a place like that. And I remember, and I know you do too, because we've both been here that long, but there was a time back in the 1980s, when you used to have paper phone books, right? The big Bell South phone book that would come out. And it always had a picture on it of something that was representative of the big thing going on in Charlotte. And I remember in 1987, on the cover of the Yellow Pages, or I guess the White Pages, was the Ramesses exhibit at the Mint Museum. That was right before the Charlotte Hornets took off, and then the Panthers after them, and then all the things that we have today. And you think about the Wells Fargo Championship, and just it contributes to the overall just tapestry of Charlotte sports and events. But I think nothing against that exhibit at the Mint Museum, but that was the biggest thing we had going back in 1987. You think about all that is in this city now, not to mention the Mint Museum, but it just the Wells Fargo to me. I think what you're saying is also what I'm thinking, which is you don't have to be a golf aficionado. You don't even have to play golf. I don't play golf anymore because I'm terrible at it. I like to watch it, but I don't know near as much about it as the guys over at FNZ. But going to the Wells Fargo Championship, it just feels like a place you want to see and be seen.
You see, in a given afternoon, you can see everybody you've ever known.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm amazed that, oh, man, I haven't seen you in 7 years. Now we saw each other at the tournament last year. I mean, you just run into old friends, and you run into people you never met, but they want to talk. And it's just a neat, and you talked about the tapestry. It's part of the fabric of the city. It's something that we as a city and as a region really anticipate and look forward to and show up. And it's just fun. I may not go this year, but if I don't, this will be the first time I haven't gone in God, since its inception, man.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's you can go to watch golf, and you can go to watch people.
Yeah.
And you can go watch people watch golf or whatever combination of that you want. But it's much more than just a golf tournament, and it's an event that if you're new to Charlotte and you've never done it before, I think you obviously can hear us saying we highly recommend it. Tom Sorensen, Charlotte Observer columnist for many, many years. How many all told was it at the Observer?
35.
Now, I always like when I have people like you in here to get the lay of the land as far as what came before that. When did you know you wanted to do this, and how? Well, you know, I have the nutshell version, I guess, but how did you get to where you ultimately got to?
I was lucky in the sense that there was nothing else I could do. I mean, I thought I'd be a good therapist, but the only people who disagree is everybody I've ever met. So, but I can't fix things. I can't make things. I can't build things. I just could never do that stuff. And my dad, when I was growing up, was a slot man in sports at the Minneapolis Tribune. He decided which story would go where. I'd have friends over. He'd say, all right, what's bigger, Manuel Ramirez trying to break Babe Ruth's home run record or the Minnesota Vikings? Manuel Ramirez. No, Vikings. And then he started the Tribune's book section and wrote a column. And
excuse me.
And I like to write, and I wanted to get paid for writing. So I majored in journalism at Minnesota. Left campus on a Thursday, walked into the St. Cloud Daily Times for my first job. Got a job at the Minneapolis Tribune 2.5 years later. And nobody in my family had ever left Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And as a kid, I'd throw a stick in the Mississippi, and I'd pretend it was going to wash up in St. Louis or Memphis or even New Orleans or Natchez, some exotic city, somewhere far away and preferably warm. And I just knew I'd go when I had the opportunity. And there was a magazine, it may still be, editor and publisher. And I'd never covered sports full time, but it implied you didn't have to have a hardcore sports background. So I applied to the Charlotte Observer, and they hired me. And that was, I came here in on January 7th, 1981, and left on December 11th, 2015. And I can think of the single best question I've ever asked. All the interviews I've done, I can think of the best question I've ever asked.
Okay.
I never talked about it. It's really stupid. But I was in Pittsburgh, staying at Marriott, which is where all sports writers stay because we collect the points. And the Harlem Globetrotters were there.
Uh-huh.
And it was right around Christmas. And one of the Globetrotters walked through the lobby, and I was standing there. And I said, man, how'd you guys do? And he said, oh, we won. And he went, oh, you almost had me. I said, oh, man, I almost had him. But I just... For some twisted reason, I like that question, and I liked his answer.
You know, I was over at Bank of America Stadium one day. We were doing a photo shoot for the station. This is probably like 7 or 8 years ago, and we got on the freight elevator, and Sir Purr got on the freight elevator. For whatever reason, I was sitting there with him, and there were a couple of people else in there, and you know, it's elevator talk. You're riding up and down. You go, so how you doing? And he looked at me and he's like, and the guy said, he can't talk. And I thought to myself, someday someone is going to get him to slip, right? Somebody's going to get the mascot to talk.
You tried, man.
But
you
it's like it's right in line
you
with
what you should have him on.
You know what? That would probably be a short show, but I'll try. And then, you know, if for backup, I'll call Hugo and see if we can get him in here. So you were talking about your all-time favorite question. So I do want to get into some of the overarching questions. A guy like you writes for the Charlotte Observer since 1981. And I said off the air when we were talking about dates, I said, are you glad that you wrote in the era that you did? And your answer was?
Oh, yeah. And there's still a lot of talent at the newspaper right now, but they don't have the resources we did. They don't sell. I mean, at one point, our profit margin in the 90s, I think, was outrageous. It might have been 30%. It was just jammed with advertising. And we went places. We just sent people all over. Kelvin Brock of Charlotte, mm-hmm. and major in finance at the University of Charlotte, fought for the heavyweight championship against Vladimir Klitschko at Madison Square Garden. I went to New York for a week. And we had two writers up there and a photographer. And we were up there all week. And, you know, we wouldn't do that now. And... it's not a criticism of the Observer, just the industry has changed. But I got to be there during a time that we had so much fun. I mean, I worked with and for some of the best friends I'll ever have and still see them. And I got lucky.
You always like to write about boxing. I know this because you came on when Muhammad Ali passed away. I've brought you on a couple of times to talk about boxing. You and Al Gardner, I tell you what, I mean, if I have a boxing subject, I have two of the guys that are the biggest boxing fans. And old school boxing, which leads me to the question, do you get into the UFC? Do you like the modern? I mean, boxing still exists, but boxing is not the sport with the following that it once had. And it has competition that it didn't used to have.
Yeah, Dana White, who was the behind the UFC, he's a great promoter. I mean, he knew how to sell tickets. He had an event in Charlotte. I called him three times. He called me back four times. And I thought, that's he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
And he was a former boxer and boxing fan. And he said, you will love UFC. And I'd seen it locally. Fight Lab is a local promoter. But I see art in boxing. I don't want a slugfest. I want movement. And I really do see art, and I don't see that in UFC. I'm sure it's there. I just don't know that sport as well. Boxing, to me, was just the ultimate underdog sport. There were no boxing scholarships. I watched a guy fighting at Grady Cole, and the locker room was full, so we changed in a bathroom that people walk into. I mean, mm-hmm. that's what he put on his trunks and his robe. And it was the ultimate for underdogs. I mean, Kelvin Seabrooks was the bantamweight champion of the world. He grew up in Charlotte, still lives here. Really good guy. Probably closer to him than any athlete I've ever met. Although Flair's close. But Kelvin was a dishwasher. He had a record one time of just over 500, and he washed dishes for a living. Then he went to Australia, and he cold-cocked, knocked him out with one punch, the number two ranked bantamweight, 118 pounds in the world. And when he came back, his manager said, hey, change his record. I think it was, let's say his record was 18 and 13. His manager called and said, Tom, his record is now 27 and 13. I said, Bill, he won one fight. And Bill said, yeah, but it was a big one. And that's boxing.
Yes.
And it's the epitome of the sport for underdogs. And I was writing something. I needed to talk to Kelvin. I said, if you knew in 1981 when you made your debut against, I think it was Peanut Hughes, and at Grady Cole, Park Road, Park Center then, mm-hmm. would you still have done it? And he paused for a second. And he said, yeah, I believe I would have.
Yeah.
And he just so many good athletes. And I'm kind of their guy because I take them seriously. I listen to their stories. They would. One guy laid tile for a living. When he laid tile, he thought about boxing. When he boxed, he didn't think about laying tile. In his mind, he was going to be the light heavyweight champion of the world. Yeah, he was dreaming, but he worked. And he tried, and I just identified with those guys.
Well, you know, we talked about pro wrestling earlier, and a lot of those late 80s Crockett pro wrestlers were like that, too. They would go and be the wrestlers on the weekends or go to the arena shows, but then a lot of them went back to doing regular everyday things, and you really have that reinforced when you see some of the Where Are They Now stories about some of these guys. I saw a picture of gorgeous Jimmy Garvin the other day, and I was doing before, and I was like, this is the same guy who used to walk to the ring with Precious? Remember
Precious?
That?
Oh, yeah, I remember Precious.
And
get
this,
out of here.
Yeah, of course you do. And Baby Doll back in the day. Now, I'll tell you this before we go to break. We got one more segment with Tom Sorensen. People ask me sometimes, what's your favorite interview that you've ever done? And I can name three or four or five of them, and some of them are because they were heist, you know, big famous people. Like I had a chance to interview President Trump when he was president one-on-one down at CPCC not too long ago. So I obviously say that, and I interviewed Vice President Biden when he called me from Washington. I'll still never forget it. They said, we have an opportunity, and I said, sure, because, I mean, come on. And then we ended up talking for 15 or 20 minutes. I got to the end of the interview, and I said, okay, I know I've taken up a lot of your time. And he said, what else you got? I said, okay. But what I'm building to is I always, always answer that question by including somebody else. And I had a chance to interview him on this show about a year before he was born. But one of the most fascinating conversations was the American Dream Dusty Rhodes. Bo Thompson here, final segment with Tom Sorensen, longtime Charlotte Observer columnist. And so you used to write a column called Tom Talks.
I did.
Which was, as you put it, I think you described it as a radio show in print, right? Did you do that because you wanted to have a radio show, or you listened to the radio a lot? Because I used to love to read it, but I always thought to myself, does he listen to a lot of sports talk radio, so he wants to bring his opinion to the page, or how did that happen?
I did listen to a lot of radio, sports and news, but I had to write a column, and I couldn't come up with any other ideas, so I just thought about that, and it was a way to introduce a lot of different topics. You know, I'd make up the names of the callers. They'd always be alliterative. I'd look up. I'd try to find the most obscure towns in the Carolinas I could.
You made them up, but I guarantee you some of them were probably patterned after people you heard on the radio.
Yes, they were. And it was funny because editors did not like it. Readers liked it.
Yeah.
And I got a lot of feedback on that. And it was fun to do. It was easy to do. And it was just a way to introduce a lot of opinion.
All right, I'm going to do a bit of a speed round here. I got a lot of final questions to get that I knew this would go fast. So, just the general state of affairs, your thoughts on where the Charlotte Hornets are right now.
They're in a better place than they have been for a long, long time. LaMelo Ball is a star. He will be one of the best players in basketball. They have a good coach who came from San Antonio, James Borrego, and he was known for developing talent, and he's been doing that. And they have Hayward, they have some young talent, and they just are in place to finally be good.
You know, Kemba Walker was an incredible Charlotte Hornet. I've said, though, a lot recently that when I look at LaMelo, no disrespect to Kemba Walker, but having been here since the beginning of the Hornets, I see Larry Johnson and Alonzo Mourning in my head, because that was when we were put on the map, and people were talking about Charlotte in other places where they hadn't before. And I feel like, again, Kemba being what he was, there's a buzz, no pun intended, or maybe I am attending it, there's a buzz about this team that we haven't seen since those days, in my opinion.
Part of that's Hayward, Gordon Hayward, whom they signed from Boston, and who was that good. But Ball, he does things nobody for this franchise has ever done. He grabbed a rebound and threw a pass the length of the court the other night.
Yep.
And he looked like Tom Brady, but with a better arm. He looked like Pat Mahomes. It just was brilliant. And it wasn't just the pass. It was a presence of mind to get rid of that ball immediately. They're in a really good place.
Well, and he said post-game after that, they asked him about it, and he said, that's something that we used to do all the time when I was playing with Pops and practicing. So as to say that it wasn't just a Hail Mary that I threw, that's something that was kind of second nature to try.
And deadly accurate.
Yes. Wow. All right, the Carolina Panthers just finished the latest NFL draft. What do you make of the Panthers right now?
I like the draft. They acquired a lot of talent. Receiver they got out of LSU in the second round, I think, will be a coup. Boy, they waited to fix that offensive line. They waited to the third round, drafted a guy from BYU who's really good at blocking Mormons. Okay. He drafted a guy from BYU. I don't know how he's going to be. I don't know how good he will be.
Welcome back to Tom Talk, ladies and gentlemen.
They got to fix that line, and they have yet to do. They've got, right now, that offensive line is full of about 8 or 10 backups, and they need some starters to emerge.
Favorite Charlotte sports figure you've ever covered?
Oh, man. Steve Smith Sr. was compelling. Thomas Davis in the old days. You know, Muggsy and Dale are really tough to beat. But I'll tell you, I just had a connection with Ric Flair. I'm from Minneapolis. He's from a well-to-do suburb of Minneapolis. And we just hit it off. And he never said no comment.
That is true. Now, I'll tell you this. Interviewing Ric Flair on the radio is different than Ric Flair doing a promo in front of the ring. You realize that there's a subdued Ric Flair?
Yeah.
Hey, Tom, how you doing? Ric Flair. Woo! And then there's the Ric Flair, the woo! I grew up watching him and covering him, too. I need to get him in here one day.
Oh, man.
I need to do that. So, Woody Kane on Twitter a few days ago, a fellow media guy. It's funny. Somebody posted something. I can't remember. It was something about something the Hornets had done, and people love to post the memes, right? People love to post, and I'm not saying that I agree that this was a dumpster fire, but you know the meme out there of the dumpster fire where somebody said, had a take on the Hornets that he didn't like or somebody didn't like, and so his meme was the scoreboard falling to the floor in the new Charlotte Coliseum, which is gone now, way back in the 80s, and I responded and I said, now that's an old school reference right there. And that leads me to my last question. I remember that event. I know you do. Someday we'll expound on what happened there for people who weren't in Charlotte back then. But when you think back to, I said, people you like to cover, when you think back over all your years, is there a particular event, a sporting event that came to Charlotte or happened in Charlotte that you always think back on and say, I'm glad I covered that?
It was the Hornets winning their first playoff series against the Celtics. It was here in Charlotte. It was, Larry Johnson, and it was Muggsy, and it was Dell, and it was Alonzo hitting that winning shot. And it just lifted Charlotte to a place it's never been. They beat the Boston Celtics in a playoff series. I talked to Alonzo's now an executive with the Miami Heat and very good at his job. But, you know, he wasn't the most loquacious guy. But when he came back here for a playoff series as a member of the Heat, he and I talked about it. And we just laughed because it was one of those. That team was the kind of team, whenever I see those guys, Tim Kempton, Rex Chapman, Muggsy, Dell, we just smile. Because it was a special group. And even George Shinn, we were enemies, and now we're friends. I mean, it's just, it was a really neat time to live in Charlotte, and I got to be part of it.
Well, and not only that, but you wrote about it and made it come alive for so many of us during those years, and it's been an honor to have you on the show. I hope we can do it again. And,
this has been so much fun. Thank you.
Thank you. Tom Sorensen, Charlotte Observer, and just a guy I could talk to for 3 more hours. So we'll schedule the next one. How about that?
I'm in.